Carlo can't grab it. It comes to Verhaeghe. Turns, shoots, scores! Carter Verhaeghe! And the Panthers have eliminated the Boston Bruins!
Down to 10 seconds. Here's Lehkonen. Sends in deep. 5 seconds remaining. Nathan MacKinnon. Hit to the board by Tanev. Centering pass blocked off. The Kraken win game 7. They knock off the defending Stanley Cup champs.
Unleash the Kraken. I'm going to wear this shirt out if they keep winning. I mean, I've got a few different shirts, but I really like this new white one I've got. Dusty's like, do you wash your clothes, Wade? This one I might have worn twice without washing it. Man, oh man, the hockey playoffs are insane. I mean, it's absolutely insane. Two of the best teams in hockey are done in the first round. The Boston Bruins, we talked about, they became the Golden State Warriors, except the Warriors at least made it to the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. Home ice does not matter. It does. We talked about what sport where home field advantage means the least. I don't think there's any doubt. It's hockey, yeah. And maybe soccer would be after that. It is amazing. I mean, the Boston Bruins had the best record in the history of hockey in a regular season. They won 65 games. A lot of pressure. We talked about the pressure part of it. And they had the most points ever scored in a hockey season, 135. They scored 43 more points than the Florida Panthers, who was their opponent in this best 4 out of 7 first-round series. The Panthers were the 8th seed. The Bruins were up 3-1. They not only the best team in hockey, who only lost 12 games all year, they lost 3 in a row in the playoffs. 2 at home. I mean, I don't want to say choke job, but that don't sound good. The Florida Panthers are moving on as they beat the Boston Bruins in overtime. You heard the goal. 4-3 was the final. And so the best regular season in NHL history is done, and nobody's going to look back and say the Bruins are the best team ever. They couldn't even get out of the first round of the playoffs against an 8th seed. So just very disappointing, obviously. And it's the second largest point differential in a series upset, only behind the LA Kings, who upset the Edmonton Oilers in the first round of 1982. So we're going back 23, 18, 41 years. So what happened last night with the Bruins hadn't happened in 41 years. That is insane. And so the Panthers will move on and face the Maple Leafs in the second round. There's a game one. There's a one final game 7 tonight. The Devils host the Rangers at 7:00 ESPN. And then the Kraken, in just their second year of existence, my Seattle Kraken, are headed to the second round of NHL playoffs. They are the first ever expansion franchise to win their first playoff series against the defending Stanley Cup champions. It's never been done before. So two things that we have never seen in hockey history happen on the same night. The Kraken won 3 of the 4 games in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the 5 of the 7 games were won by the road team. 6 of the 8 teams moving on in all the series, okay? There's 8 teams that are now left. 6 of the 8 were the road teams. They did not have home ice, moved mm-hmm. on. Only 2 teams that had home ice advantage have moved on, or at least to this point. This goes to show you that the regular season is nice, but does it really mean that much? The NBA doesn't treat it like it means very much. Mm-hmm. The NFL, I think it means quite a bit. I think it really means a lot in NFL, but at the same time, we've seen the 1 seed lose after having a bye week and resting up. We've seen the Packers do it. We've seen the Ravens do it. The Titans do it recently. It happens a lot. So home field's important, but home ice doesn't seem to be that important. The regular season doesn't seem to be that important. We talk about baseball. You know, the Braves last year, they had home, a whole bunch of teams had home field advantage. The St. Louis Cardinals had home field advantage for 2 games and lost to the Phillies both games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Braves had home field advantage against the Phillies. They didn't win the series. The Dodgers had home field. They lost. And those teams won 100 games or more. The Braves and Dodgers did. And so I sit here and I say, should you have a best out of 7 where 5 of your 7 are on home ice, or 5 of your 7 should be at home in baseball or in the NBA? Because really, only having 1 game advantage at home for being 48 points better than the Florida Panthers in the case of the Boston Bruins, all they got was one extra home game. And now, granted, they lost at home. I mean, they had Game 7 at home, so I don't feel sorry for them. But, I mean, seriously, all that work, all those months, only nets you one extra game at home. It doesn't seem right. You should have a significant advantage. You know, I do like that NCAA Women's Tournament, I'll give them this. You know, your top seeds, they get to host the first few rounds. They should be rewarded for that. I don't think there's a major problem with that, in my opinion. Now, the men's tournament, of course, has all the neutral sites, and they're trying to spread it across the country and make a whole bunch of money. I get all that, too. But it doesn't seem like it's much of an advantage when you go through 6 months of a regular season. In baseball, you win 105 games, and you're out in the first round because in the best of five, see, baseball's even worse in the first round, best out of five, I mean, you lose game one. The first game of the series, you get dominated by a great pitcher, all right? You just can't get the bats going. You lose 2-1 in game one. Your advantage is gone. Yeah. Poof! In a few hours, it's gone after working so hard to be way better than the team you're playing. And so the playoffs, it is really true. Just get in. Just get in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at the Lakers. The Lakers are a 7 seed in the NBA. Do you think they care? We talk about all year long. Do you think the Warriors and Lakers care what their seed line was? No.
No.
They just need to get in. And here they are, moving on to the second round of Western Conference playoffs. So it's frustrating to me. It's awesome for the Kraken, my team, yay. But the Avs were the better team all year long. The Bruins were the best team in the NHL. They only lost 12 all year, lose 3 in a row, but they only had one extra game at home. It doesn't seem quite right, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't know that there'd be any issue with changing it to 5 of the 7 games would be at the team that earns the home court or home ice or home field advantage or whatever it might be.
There'd be blowback from the teams that aren't as good.
Yeah, there would be, but I mean, I don't have any issue with it. No. I think, I don't know. I don't know why they've never changed that. It's just kind of another one of those things. It's just kind of that's the way it's always been, and I think that most of the leagues feel that that's good enough, right? Like if you're the 1 seed and you're taking on the 8 seed,
yeah,
that's good enough. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you get to the next round, then your difference in records isn't quite as big.
Right.
And so I don't know if you do that for the first round and then do the 4 out of 7 for the rest of it, yeah, or if you just keep it 4 out of 7, or if you do...
Well, you're going to keep 4 out of 7. More games money, so...
Yeah, and so... I just mean the 4 home games out of the 7, yeah, right. not the best of 7 series.
Right.
But...
And how would you format it? You know, would you go 2-2-3? That would cut down on travel. That'd make the most sense.
It would,
2-2-3.
Yeah, because you're already doing 2-2 and most of these series.
Right. So then you just don't have the return game in game 6.
Yeah.
For the lower seed. That would be the way to do it.
I would probably do it.
That would be a big advantage, and rightfully so. If you're the better team, why shouldn't you get 5, 6, and 7 at home?
Yeah. And then...
And I know there's situations where you might have one... We might be one win better.
Yeah.
And people will argue about
that. Well, and I think a lot of that... I think that's probably a lot of the reason it stays like it is.
Yeah.
Because once you get past that... Are you going to do it... That's what I'm saying. Are you going to do it for just for first round?
Yeah.
Because if you get past that, you could easily have the same... The 2-3 seed matchup, could or 6-7 with the Lakers and Warriors, whatever it might be, could easily have the exact same record. They just played in different divisions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it'd be like, well, they didn't really...
Or baseball, you had the Braves and the Dodgers. The Braves and Dodgers both won over 100 games. Should the Dodgers, because they won 2 more games during the season, should they get 3 more home games than the Braves in a best of 7?
Yeah.
I'd be leaning towards the first round because your first round has the biggest discrepancy. So I think that would be the way to do it.
I just don't think that.
And then go back to regular the rest
of
it.
I just don't think that you should do the 5 out of 7 games
all
for
the
home field team.
All the way through.
All the way through.
No, that makes sense. I would buy that. I'd vote for that. I would. So hockey, there you go. Pretty exciting stuff, no doubt. And the Bruins and Avs are gone. You'll have a new Stanley Cup champion, and the best team in hockey all year long won't even have a chance to move on to the second round, let alone get to the Stanley Cup finals. All right, got a lot of draft talk to talk, some football, NBA playoffs. Steph Curry was sensational yesterday. Charles Barkley continues to jinx teams left and right, and I'll explain that. And... if you're all worried as a Chiefs fan, oh, man, there's people that are grading the Chiefs draft this year, C+, C-, we didn't have a great draft. I will read you what people gave the Chiefs grade-wise when they drafted a guy named Patrick Mahomes. You might find it somewhat comical. That's coming up in a little bit. Bullet Relays on Friday.
Yeah, we had a lot of area athletes that did a lot of good things there on Friday, and a lot of champions as far as team-wise. Smith Center won the championship in the lower division. Boys won a 2A. Southeast Saline boys won the upper division, 3-4A. And then the girls' lower division went to TMP Marion, and the upper division went to Chapman. Real quick, we'll tell you the gold medalists from the area. Nate Myers of Rock Hills won the long jump, and then Caleb Wagenblast of Thunder Ridge, the shot put in the lower division boys. Connor Scher took home two golds in that division, 100 and 200-meter dashes for Oz. Smith Center's Garrett Warner won the 110 and 300 hurdles. Smith Center also won the 4x1, and Osborne boys won the 4x8. And the upper division boys, Grady Seifert, brought home two gold medals, continuing his great season, winning both the discus and shot put. And then the lower division girls, Tori Slavik, brought home two gold medals for Thunder Ridge in the discus and shot put. Lauren Brummett had a good day for Lakeside, winning the javelin and high jump. Addison Poor of Osborne winning the 800-meter run. Brianna Reeves of Pike Valley won the 1600. In the upper division girls, gold medalists Tatum Seifert, just like her brother Grady, had another great day, winning the discus and shot put for Beloit in the upper division. And then Charlize Cash of Concordia won the 300-meter hurdle gold medal. So those are the immediate area notes as far as the Beloit relays were concerned. You can find the complete results at nckssports.com.
All right, let's talk. We'll get baseball out of the way here, and then we'll talk some NFL draft. As the Kansas City Royals coming up, I'm going to tell you about a guy the Royals let go that's tearing up Major League Baseball, and I would have never thought it, but the Royals did lose again.
The 1-1 pitch, a high drive, left field and deep. Back it goes, deep it goes, and gone. Upper deck for Byron Buxton. Did he unload on that one? A 2-out, 3-run homer. His seventh of the year, and the Twins take a 4-0 lead.
Twins jumped out to an 8-0 lead, 7-run third for the Twins yesterday at Kauffman Stadium. They win 8-4. They win 3 of the 4 games of the series. All 8 runs by the Twins scored on Royals starter Brady Singer, who went just 2 2/3. He's 2-3 on the season. Matt Quatrero, the manager of the Royals, on the tough day for his number one starter.
I think he just some mislocations over the heart of the plate, especially when he was ahead in the count. And the pitch to Buxton didn't even look like that bad a pitch. He just pulled his hands in there and got the barrel on it. The walks to Kepler and Correa, those obviously hurt. But, you know, and then the couple runs came in after he was gone on, you know, a ball off the end of the bat Vasquez hit. You know, he battled Stamont there, but that was unfortunate that those came in as well.
All right, I'm going to give you some good news, all right? I'm going to be Mr. Optimistic about the Royals. The Royals went 7-22 in April. All right, that's not good. Here's the good news. One, they're not the worst team in baseball. Yay. Two, I hear the Royals are they are a team that really excels in the month of May. So I hear May is when they turn it on.
Yeah.
They got confused and thought the season started May 1st, and they were thinking April is extended spring training. That's what I understand. So I expect 22-7 in May. We're back to 500.
There we go.
There we go, man.
Let's do it.
They better win on Sunday when we go to Royals bus trip, where everybody's going to want their money back. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Royals lose. Here's an amazing thing I wasn't even following. So I saw this on Twitter. On November 17th, the Royals decided to release Brent Rooker. Remember Brent Rooker?
Barely.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't really do much. I remember watching him going, this guy is not a big league hitter. I remember thinking that. Like, whatever. Why are the Royals dealing with, why do they have this guy on their team? They traded for him. It was some small little deal. So on November 17th, the Royals decided to release Brent Rooker and his $725,000 contract instead of paying Hunter Dozier the remaining 2 years to make room for a Rooker. As of today, Brent Rooker, who plays for the A's, who are the worst team in baseball, he leads the American League, Brent Rooker does, with a slug of 727, OPS of 1.178. Brent Rooker hit his 9th home run in the month of April yesterday. Brent Rooker will probably be American League Player of the Month. Brent Rooker, his 9 homers this month are the most by an A's player in April since Chris Davis, who hit 10, and only behind after that McGuire, who hit 11 in 1997 with the A's. He's hitting .358. Brent Rooker, who was a Royal last year, hitting .358, 9 homers, OPS of 1.262 in April, because there was a few games in March. And he was 2-for-2 yesterday with a home run. He's second in American League in homers with 9 behind the Red Sox, Rafael Devers, who has 10. He started year 0-for-7 at the plate. and still put up these numbers so far. Look at this bleeping guy. I mean, is the guy, I hate to say it, but my first thought is this guy on roids? I mean, how do you go from not being able? And so like somebody said, it's like, well, what's the deal here? I don't know that I blame the Royals for letting Brent Rooker go exactly, says this person. And I agree. I would have let Brent Rooker go. But you do have to wonder, one, why he unlocks this kind of talent with another team. And two, why the Royals don't or can't unlock this kind of power from freely available talent like Brent Rooker or even get Hunter Dozier hit again.
Yeah.
It's good points. Very good points. So little did we know that we had this really good player and we let him go and held on to Hunter Dozier instead. And that's worked out swimmingly.
Seems like that was the case with a lot of pitchers back in the day, right? Like they were on the Royals, and then all of a sudden they leave, and all of a sudden they're okay.
Jorge Lopez became an all-star. Jorge Lopez, a few years ago, was it last year, the year before, became an all-star closer.
Yeah.
The Royals let him go after he nearly threw a no-hitter after they traded for him, and then couldn't figure things out. He became a bullpen guy. Now, in fairness to the Royals, Brent Rooker's been with other teams, and they haven't unlocked that talent either. So.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just somewhat of a fluky month. I don't know, but Brent Rooker, I would have never dreamt it. I will defend the Royals on that one. I'm like, I didn't think they were making some kind of mistake there. But it does beg the questions that I just posed for you. All right, the NFL draft continuing over the weekend in Kansas City. The Chiefs, of course, drafted K-State defensive end Felix Nduke-Uzomah in the first round on Thursday night. The Chiefs added six more draft picks over the Friday and Saturday sessions. They traded up in the second round. As we predicted, they were going to make some trades. They weren't going to draft 10 guys. We predicted that. Wasn't hard to make that prediction. They traded up to the 55th overall pick in the second round to take SMU wide receiver Rashee Rice. They traded up in the third round to add Oklahoma tackle Wanya Morris. They end up having seven picks. In the fourth round, they drafted safety Virginia Tech's Chamari Connor. In the fifth round, they drafted an outside linebacker, B.J. Thompson, from Stephen F. Austin, who used to play at Baylor. In the sixth round, they took defensive tackle of Texas, Keandre Coburn. Seventh round was cornerback Nick Jones from Ball State. I think the most intriguing pick, I think everybody's going to talk about Rashee Rice because everybody's caught up in the wide receiver conversation. And a couple things here. One, I am amazed at how gullible people are. Including these really smart people that are in the media that follow the National Football League. I am amazed. I mean, I really do believe that part of our problem in society today is because elected officials are so good to sell you a bill of goods that you're silly enough to accept and believe is true. I think our country's gullible. I think the elected officials are good at taking advantage of our vulnerabilities, and one of them is being gullible. I truly mean that. You disagree?
Absolutely not. That's why I'm not saying anything about it. Like, it's been that way for a long time, but it seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that people are very gullible. And so when I look at the draft, so when Patrick Mahomes was working out with Zay Flowers from Boston College, when he was working out with Quentin Johnston of TCU, all of a sudden, everybody just ran with it. Like, oh, the Chiefs. And I'm like, dear Lord, do you think the Chiefs are this stupid? Do you think they would make it out there and even allow videos of any of the stuff being done if it was a guy they wanted badly? Well, here's the funny part. I was trying to tell everybody this that listens to this show. That's a smokescreen. That's a smokescreen. They may have had interest in those guys, sure. But they weren't set on moving up to get one of them, okay? If the opportunity presents itself, perhaps we'd have to ask Brett Veach exactly on that. But they end up trading up in the second round to get a wide receiver, Rashee Rice, who nobody was talking, reporting, or knew about it. But Patrick Mahomes worked out with this kid. Mahomes told Veach, go get him. And this goes to people being gullible. I told you on this show, they're looking at other people that people don't even know they're looking at.
Oh, yeah.
And they throw out the Zay Flowers video, and there's video of him working with Quentin Johnston, and you're like, oh my God, we got to get Quentin Johnston. And Chiefs fans, entire first round on Thursday night, oh, this is awesome. All these receivers are falling in our lap. Nobody's taking a receiver. We can get Enigma from Ohio State. Oh, we can get Zay Flowers. He's already worked with Patrick Mahomes, Quentin Johnston. Oh my God, this is so exciting. And then all of a sudden, what are we going to do? All the receivers are off the board. And that's just the way the draft rolls. People put way too much stock in people reading a name off a card. All you got to do is look at 300,000 people that attended the draft. I mean, you talk about gullible. Listen, you're a fan. That's great. You have the right to do whatever you want in your life. I mean, good for you. I got friends that went to the draft. That's cool. I'm sure it was a great experience. I was perfectly comfortable not standing side by side with a whole bunch of lunatics and having to wait for a porta potty to open up. I'm more than happy to just watch it from afar. I had no problem missing the draft myself.
No, I didn't either.
I mean, it would have been cool if I lived nearby and went. Yeah,
hey, if I was close,
I would have probably run down.
My cousin was already in town, sure. So he went to some of it. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I probably would have done that if I was in Kansas City or right. Lawrence or somewhere close to Kansas City.
And how brilliant is the NFL? Well, they're actually kind of lucky on this one. But if you don't think the NFL is the number one sport in all of America, the draft proves it. Because, yeah. I mean, come on. Like, what's crazy is they always had it in New York, and then there was a scheduling conflict, and they were going to have to back the draft up 1 year, and so they decided to move it to another location, and the NFL stumbled upon this idea, completely stumbled. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pretty good and smart, but they stumbled and got lucky on this one, and all of a sudden it just started them going, hey, let's just kind of rotate it. Let's move it around. It's like, honestly, it's just a gigantic, bigger level of ESPN Game Day. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is.
Once a year, yeah.
It's once a year. It's a huge, huge thing. It's not every week like ESPN Game Day. And they can go all out. They have plenty of time. They let people know a year or two in advance of when the draft is going to be, where it's going to be. They know the location. They have plenty of time to plan for the draft, set up for the draft. And you know, I haven't heard too many people complaining about bad things that went bad at the draft that attended. And I'm glad those people had a great time at the draft. It's a great thing in Kansas City, great economically and so forth and so on. But it is pretty astounding and insane. When you really think about it, that we're attending an event where the commissioner and then they rotate some people to come up to read a card, and I would be willing to bet you 90% of the fans out of the 300,000 that attended don't know anything about the guys that were announced on the card, especially after Thursday night.
Yeah.
Woo! We got a D-tackle! Yay! Where's he from again? Stephen F. Austin, never heard of it. You know, I mean, it just cracks me up. And it's awesome. The NFL's got to be absolutely just jumping up for joy at how great this was. This is the best draft they've ever had in regards to attendance. It was a huge spectacle. It worked out great being in the town of the team that is the defending Super Bowl champions. I mean, they got to be ecstatic. So the Chiefs end up getting Rashee Rice, who had really great numbers at SMU. Mahomes said, if he's there, go get him, according to reports. Now, before you jump up for joy about Patrick Mahomes telling Brett Veach who to go get, I would say let's slow down and pump the brakes a little bit, and let's not sit here and think Patrick Mahomes is also the general manager of this team. Because you got to be a little bit careful when players fall in love with another player. And all you got to do is point to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Patrick Mahomes wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, the difference is, Helaire is a running back. Mahomes worked with receivers. Mm. He didn't work with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He just really liked Helaire and things he saw and everything, thought he'd fit perfectly. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he was not a first-round pick, if he was a third-round pick, and Mahomes said, go get him, that would look like a pretty good pick today. It'd be a decent, solid pick. It doesn't look good today. It's considered a bust by most, even though he averages 4.5 yards a carry in his career, which most people don't know that. He looks like a bust because he was a first-round pick. Even though he's the last pick of the first round, he was a first-round pick. And so people consider Clyde Edwards-Helaire, most Chiefs people in Chiefs Kingdom, as a bust. Well, guess who was vouching to draft him? Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes was, honestly, I don't think there's any doubt Mahomes expected bigger things out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
He's not going to say that publicly.
I think everybody did.
Right.
And part of that's injuries, which he can't really do much about.
But he's not an explosive runner. He's not what, I was excited when they drafted
him. I was very excited.
I saw him at LSU. I thought he was terrific at LSU, but he also had a whole bunch of Pro Bowlers playing with him at LSU. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson. I mean, they had Jamar Chase. I mean, they had studs on defense. Studs on the offensive line. That was almost like a pro team that year. They were so, so good offensively in particular. So I don't know if I'm a big fan of the whole, oh, Mahomes really liked him, let's go get him. Because working out without having the pads on and getting hit is completely different than actually doing that. The only thing that will give me a little bit of optimism is it's a receiver. Mahomes should know receivers better than running backs. Mm-hmm. And Mahomes is obviously older than he was a few years ago, wiser, I would think, than when he was Pusher and Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be drafted by the Chiefs. And he liked the camaraderie, the chemistry, understands the chemistry, wants the right guys in the locker room, got to meet this kid, liked the kid, even called him after he was drafted to say, hey, welcome to the Chiefs. This is a guy Patrick Mahomes vouched for. If Rashee Rice doesn't work hard and bust his tail, then he never will in his life. Because you've got the greatest quarterback in the league right now, maybe going to be the greatest quarterback all time, that actually told his management, I want that guy, go get him, and they traded up and got him in the second round. Rashee Rice, there's a little bit of pressure on you, young man, because Mahomes thinks a lot of you, so you've impressed him, which makes me feel pretty good about Mahomes vouching for him and that the Chiefs drafted him. But let's also say that last year there was a lot of talk about Sky Moore going to be really, really a great pick. And Sky Moore, I think, could still be a very solid, good receiver in this league. He came on late in the season, had all kinds of punt return issues, as we know, but made a couple of huge plays. Touchdown catch in the Super Bowl, the punt return against the Bengals. I mean, honestly, that's a huge play that people keep overlooking. They always talk about Mahomes getting hit late out of bounds and running on a one leg and a bad wheel. That whole thing don't happen if Sky Moore doesn't have a good punt return. So Sky Moore's done some good things. He started to come on late in the year, and I think Sky Moore's going to be a really good player. But it took till the very end of the season and really into the playoffs for him to really make any kind of significant contribution, right? And he was a second-round pick that the Chiefs really liked. Well, here we are, second-round pick they really like. It's going to take Rashee Rice time to understand the terminology. The offense is not simple. And so to expect Rashee Rice to be just slide in and be Juju Smith-Schuster's replacement, I think, is naive. Sky Moore is going to be Juju Smith-Schuster's replacement. He can be a possession receiver. He shorter routes. He's not as physical as Juju Smith-Schuster, but maybe a little bit more speed. So Rashee Rice, I think, is probably a solid pick. He might be a bust. He might be a Pro Bowler, and it's steal the draft. We don't know. But when you talk about, ooh, Mahomes is so for him, I'm so excited because Mahomes wanted him, Mahomes got his guy, well, he wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and you same people that are all excited about Rashee Rice are wanting Clyde Edwards-Helaire traded or cut. And that was a Mahomes guy that he wanted. So just keep all that in perspective. They did not draft a tight end, which surprised me a little bit, but depends on where you are on the board. They did cover the positions of ultimate need, defensive end pass rusher with Felix from K-State. They got a wide receiver to add depth in the wide receiver room. Some people believe that DeAndre Hopkins will be a June 1st cut. You could always get him on, and then the Chiefs could get Hopkins on a cheap deal. I mean, maybe Hopkins still is a Chief. I don't know. I wouldn't count on it, but maybe that's a possibility. If he really wants to win a title, he joins the Chiefs and takes less money. Perhaps that happens. But all the picks that I mentioned, they took a corner, a D tackle, an outside linebacker, they got a safety. Their first three rounds, they got a edge rusher, wide receiver, and a tackle. And those were the three positions that most people said they needed to address. They addressed them in the first three picks. Everybody's talking about Rashee Rice. A lot of people, of course, talking about Felix Anaduke-Uzomah because he's a K-Stater from Kansas City. The person being overlooked, and I think might be the steal of the draft, and there is proof in the pudding that history does show that Brett Veach is really good at finding these guys, and I think the overlooked pick in this draft is the third-round pick that they traded up for. Mm-hmm. Wanya Morris, a tackle from Oklahoma. Okay, he plays in a he played most of his career. Obviously, Venable's a little bit different. Well, not really that different. Oklahoma still, you know, they threw the ball a lot, so forth and so on. He's going to be in a similar offense. He knows he with Creed Humphrey, buddies with Creed Humphrey. He's known Trey Smith over the years. They have a question mark at right tackle. Jawan Taylor's a left tackle. They signed a free agency for the Jaguars. He moves from right to left tackle. I think the Chiefs feel pretty good about that. At right tackle now, you've got Lucas Niang, who was a third-round pick a few years ago. They still like him, but he's been injury-prone. They now have Wanya Morris, who I think they really like because they traded up for him, obviously. And Derek Kennard's a guy that still they drafted last year that could be a factor in regards to a rotational player that could go play guard or play a little bit of tackle. I don't think he's your right tackle. I like the pick. I really do. I think of all the picks the Chiefs made, that one to me, Trey Smith was a sixth-round pick. And he's a dominant guard. And he fell because he had a blood clot issue and people got scared off by him. Creed Humphrey was a second-round pick. The Chiefs addressed that. I mean, they addressed their offensive line after the Super Bowl when they lost to Tampa Bay. They went out and got Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, and those guys could be 10-year starters in this league and Pro Bowlers for year in and year out. And now you added Wanya Morris, and there's another young guy. And now you got Juwan Taylor under contract for multiple years. You don't have to worry about Orlando Brown anymore because, you know, you cut bait with him. And so, I mean, the only old guy on that line is Joe Tooney. Yeah. And he's not old. I think he's 30 or 29. So the line is set up pretty good, but they added depth there, and they added a young guy they really like. I think that's the pick that you're going to look back on in a year or two and say that was the best pick in the draft that they had. And I don't want to say that Felix Udikiozama is going to be bad. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that Rashee Rice is not going to be a good player. What I'm saying is you look back at the Chiefs draft, you know, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith were the steals of the draft, but Trey Smith was the ultimate steal.
Oh, absolutely.
That was the best pick in their draft based on the round. That was their best pick in that draft, and that was a very good draft for the Chiefs. I think Wanya Morris is the best pick in the draft right here for them.
Yeah, and all you got to do is look at guys like Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, too, to see
how they develop guys.
Because people are like, you know, a lot of people would be like, well, are you going to start a rookie tackle? Well, he started a rookie center and a rookie guard.
That's right.
And they thrived.
Yes, sir.
Right? Like, Creed Humphrey was immediately an impact on this team.
No doubt.
The first day he stepped on the field as a starter. And so, I think Wanya Morris could be the right tackle
right
day one this year.
I agree.
If it develops the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel comfortable with that instead of Lucas Niang, because I think that's the other option. I think the Chiefs are looking at maybe a right tackle if they don't go find somebody else in free agency.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to do that since they drafted this kid in the third round. And like you said, I do like the fact that, you know, he came from Oklahoma where Creed Humphrey was. Didn't necessarily play with Creed Humphrey, I don't think. But he did play with Trey Smith at Tennessee. So knowing kind of some of the tendencies of the guy that might be right next to you could be pretty big, too, and could help get things moving along a lot quicker to make that offensive line where they want it to be, because I think that does open the door now for Taylor to go ahead and get ready to be the left tackle, and then Morris can be the right tackle if it works out the right way for you, and you can have that continuity on the line. And I think that I agree with you. I think that probably is going to end up being what looks like the steal of the draft for the Chiefs. I don't know if he's going to be the best player out of all the seven guys that they picked, but I think
best
he
value.
Is going to be one of the best value and can make an impact pretty quickly if they do the thing the right way.
So after the draft, all these guys on all these different platforms, you know, grade the draft. It's always fun because you and I can grade the draft and grade it. Anybody listening that doesn't even know, if you don't know anything about any of these players, you could throw a grade out there and you probably won't be that far off from everybody else. I mean, really, that's what it is. Well, there's no way to prognosticate. If you could, you would be rich beyond belief if you could prognosticate how this is going to go. But I want to give you an example of how wrong people can be. So, and trust me, I've been wrong before. I've been wrong on various things many, many times. The grades that I have seen from various places range from a C+. I think B- is the best I saw for the Chiefs so far. C+ to C-. The Chiefs draft was graded that way. Now, remember, they're drafting at the end of each round. Now, they traded up in the second and third, okay? They had 7 picks, and you're not going to get a superstar name when you're picking at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So C- stands out to me. Why does C- stand out to me? Chiefs Kingdom Memes Twitter account put this out there. I retweeted it. Follow me on Twitter, NCKS Radio Guy 10, and you can read this tweet that I posted out there. Chiefs Kingdom Memes put out there, just a reminder that NFL draft grades are pointless. # Chiefs Kingdom. 2017, the Kansas City Chiefs moved up 17 spots to trade with the Bills to draft a young man named Patrick Mahomes. May have heard of him. Quarterback from Texas Tech. Let me read the grade for Patrick Mahomes in the draft pick by the Chiefs. The grade 6 years ago was C-. Here was the analysis. Calling Mahomes a project is a major understatement. He's nowhere near ready to play in the NFL, and honestly, he may never be. Between his inconsistent accuracy due to poor mechanics, his tendency to bail from clean pockets, and his lack of field vision, he's going to leave as many big plays on the field as he creates. This was a risky pick. Well, I'd say the risk was worth it.
I saw that quote come out after they won the Super Bowl, too.
I love it. I love it.
Or the analysis, you know.
And I will say this. I think when you looked at how he played in college, he was inconsistent accuracy because of poor mechanics. He still has poor mechanics at times. He does bail from clean pockets. That's one of my pet peeves.
I mean, nothing was wrong in
well, I think one thing is,
as far as some of the things that he did there.
Yeah, I think most of it is somewhat spot on. His lack of field vision, I disagree with.
Well, yeah. I forgot that was part of that.
He had good vision in Texas Tech. I've seen highlights. I mean, he had vision. He's going to leave as many big plays on the field as he creates. Well, clearly that's not true.
That's not true either, yeah.
So, but, you know, it wasn't far from being unrealistic in regards to it's a
what
fair
he does,
it was
right?
At the time.
Your analysis of leaving big, you know, more big plays on the field than he creates is just an analysis. That's not what he was doing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But C minus was the grade. Well, how would we grade it today, 6 years later? I would say A plus, 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 plus.
Not enough pluses to go after the A.
So this goes back to the whole grading of drafts. I've said this for years. You shouldn't grade a draft until at least 3 years, if not five. Okay, so if you redid the 2017 draft, who would be the number one overall pick?
Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. You know, right now, the number one overall pick was Bryce Young. Odds are, if 5 years from now, I doubt Bryce Young, if you redrafted this thing, Bryce Young would be number one pick. I'll bet you there's a second or third or a fourth round pick that has a great next 3 years or 5 years, and they would be, if they redrafted this thing, a top 10 pick. It happens all the time. Happens all of the time. And so that's why it's a crapshoot. You know, they evaluate talent, these GMs and organizations, they interview kids, and they're kids, young men. They interview them. They try to find the best fit, the best culture. Sometimes these kids get in the wrong system. You get drafted, and it's not that the player is bad. It's that it's the wrong system for him. You know, like Will Levis is going to Tennessee. A lot of people said he was a, you know, top 10 pick possibly. He may end up having the best career of all four quarterbacks drafted in the or five in the first couple of rounds because Hooker was drafted by the Lions. Mm-hmm. He may end up having the best career. Mainly, and it doesn't mean that the other quarterbacks maybe were horrible. It might just mean that he found the best fit. Listen, Alex Smith was drafted number one overall pick by the San Francisco 49ers. And they kept changing head coaches. He had an offensive coordinator, a new one, every year. Do you think Alex Smith, when he was drafted, people were like, well, he's going to have a new offensive coordinator every year? No, you think you're going to have the same people and there's consistency, and thus he probably would have been a better quarterback. Alex Smith then goes to where there's a place of stability, a coach that knows offense and quarterbacks, and he excels and was the number one rated quarterback in the National Football League before eventually Mahomes took over. Alex Smith, did he have a career worthy of being the number one overall pick? No. But did he have a really good career? Yes, he did. Did he underachieve? Well, yeah, he did, based on him being the number one overall pick. But if Alex Smith was the 33rd overall pick, like Will Levis is, if Will Levis has a career Alex Smith has, that's a hell of a pick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But if Bryce Young has a career Alex Smith had, it's considered, they got the wrong quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, C.J. Stroud ends up being a 10-time Pro Bowler and wins a couple rings. Well, clearly the Panthers screwed up. They drafted the wrong guy, even though Stroud had an 18 on the S2 test. So quarterbacks especially, you just say, I don't know, man. It's about fit. You know, Joe Montana was not a strong-arm quarterback. In fact, Joe Montana right now, if you had the draft now and Joe Montana was entering it, he wouldn't even be drafted in the first five rounds probably. He doesn't have strong arm. He's not that mobile. Mm-hmm. But during his time, he ended up being a really great quarterback. But you know what really helped Joe Montana? Bill Walsh. He played for an amazing offensive genius. The West Coast offense, so he didn't have to push the ball down the field all the time. Then it helped that you get a Jerry Rice, you get a Dwight Clark, you get Tom Rathman, Roger Craig, which is the organization putting good pieces around him, just like the Chiefs have put good pieces around Patrick Mahomes. And the Patriots always focused on getting a really good defense for Tom Brady, and he always had a great tight end in Gronkowski and so forth and so on. So you have to have the right fit. It's got to be, you know, is it going to work? Well, Wanya Morris might be the perfect fit for the Chiefs, but Rashee Rice might be a bad fit. We won't know for a while. So let's go ahead and regrade the drafts 3 or 5 years from now. And why do we got to grade them right away? Because people are gullible, and people want to read about grades from people that maybe have never even played the game themselves.
Yeah, I don't. I don't even look at draft grades other than to.
I did it like, just to talk
for
about
the show, right?
Right?
Like we would do that.
I don't look at it.
And I would do that too if I was in your chair today. Yeah. You know, I would look and see.
And I didn't study and look up a whole bunch of them.
But it's just like it's insane to me. Draft grades, grades on recruitment classes and college football, and basketball, and all that. Grades are just like they don't mean a damn thing. Like let's just be honest, they don't mean anything. And I'm not. You don't know if the guy is even going to end up on campus sometimes in a college class. He might get there and then be like, nah, this ain't for me. I'm out.
Right.
And so, but you've graded him as a 4-star, right? Yeah. And so, or you've graded him as a 2-star and it didn't matter, right? Like it didn't even mean anything. And then they end up going to find somebody that's a 3-star that's going to replace your 2-star. Your grade's going to go up anyway.
Exactly.
So it's like, what do you like? It's just all these grades especially the draft, because you can look at what these kids did in college, and you can look at everything that you did leading up to the combine and all this stuff. You've not seen this kid in their offense or their defense yet, that the team that drafted him. Maybe that's just a great fit. I think a lot of the things that go into draft grades, too, are like people focus too much. And I was guilty of this on Friday night because I was like, did the Chiefs really need to trade up to get this guy from SMU, this Rashee Rice? But then I'm kind of processing and thinking, and I think Brett Veach is purposely trading up, even if he doesn't have to, because he wants to unload picks.
Yeah, he don't want to sign 10 kids.
I think a lot of these people that are grading that are kind of saying, well, they didn't need to trade up to get Rashee Rice. That's a bad that's not smart. So that's not good value by going up. And then I'm not saying that they did or didn't need to. I don't know if anybody else was looking in the 7 spots, whatever, that could have taken him before the Chiefs were going to pick anyway. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like I thought that for a second, but then I'm like, well, they don't want 10 draft picks, so they're going to unload one of these, trade up, and swap the pick, and then get rid of one in the 5th or whatever it was later. Mm-hmm. And so I think we get too focused on some of that, too.
I agree.
When people are grading drafts, that you didn't have to trade up to get this guy. Well, you didn't have to trade down probably either and then risk losing a guy, but they wanted more draft picks, a different team, you know,
and
later in the draft. And so obviously, that's a way of doing that. You trade a 5th round that you have for next year's pick, you know, later on Saturday. And so now you're down to 7, and that's a normal draft, right?
Yeah.
You're expecting
one per round.
In a usual year to get one per round, or maybe one or less, one more or less than that. 6 to 8 picks is normally where you want to be in a draft. And I think the Chiefs especially, because they don't want to spend a lot of salary cap on their draft picks when they have a team that they feel is ready to go.
Sure. No, I totally agree.
And I think people look too close at some of that, too, when they're grading.
I think that's a great point. After the draft, the Chiefs added multiple undrafted free agents and minicamp invites, including invites for K-State corner. How do you pronounce that one?
Echo Boydo.
Is it Echo? Yeah. Okay, I thought so. Boydo. Yeah. And Washburn wide receiver James Letcher. I don't know if Hunter Butkey got an invite.
I have not seen anything. I was looking all the way around for Hunter yesterday and didn't see anything. So.
I'll check in with Hunter and see what's going on there for him. He used to be at Beloit and as a Fort Hays State All-American tight end, and then was injured some this year. So the draft, I think the Chiefs did fine. I'm not blown away by the draft, but I wasn't expected to be, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know if Chiefs fans thought they were going to get, you know, 4 superstars in this draft. That wasn't going to happen. Now, maybe they ended up getting a couple. I mean, it's possible, but they don't have to be the top 10. You don't have to be in the top 10 to end up getting great players. All you got to do is look at what the Chiefs have done. Think about this. You go down the Chiefs, go down the list here, and I'm going off of memory, right? So it could be wrong here. But Pacheco is a 7th round pick. He's your starting running back. Okay?
Yeah.
Jerick McKinnon might be on this team. Was he even drafted? Jerick McKinnon? I don't know. But he wasn't a high draft pick. I know that. He might be on the team. He's unsigned right now. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 1st round pick out of LSU. Okay? Wide receiver Marquise Valdez-Scantling. I don't know when he was drafted, but I'm sure he wasn't a high draft pick. Travis Kelce was a 3rd round pick, and he's maybe the greatest tight end that ever played the game.
McKinnon was actually a 3rd round
pick. Okay, see, 3rd round pick, so he wasn't jump off the charts crazy good. Kelce was a 3rd round pick. Creed Humphrey was a 2nd round pick. Trey Smith was a 6th round pick. Joe Tooney, I don't know what his draft was.
I think he was 2nd, if I remember
right. Orlando Brown was a late 1st round pick. He's no longer there. Jawan Taylor, was Jawan Taylor a 2nd round pick? I think Jawan Taylor might have been a 2nd round pick. You can look these up as I go. Right tackle, Niang.
Tooney was 3rd.
Okay. Niang, he's a 3rd round pick, and he may start right tackle. If not, Wanya Morris is your starting tackle. He's a 3rd round pick. I don't have all the Sky Moore's a second round pick.
Taylor was second.
Taylor was a second round, so I decided that one right.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling was a fifth round pick.
Okay, there you go. Justin Watson, I'm sure, wasn't even drafted.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
You look on the defensive side. Legarius Sneed was a fourth round pick. You don't think he's better than a fourth round pick right now? I think that's worked out pretty well. Trent McDuffie was a first round pick. Jalen Watson was a seventh round pick. Josh Williams was a fourth round pick. Nick Bolton. There are a lot of people upset when the Chiefs drafted Nick Bolton. Undersized linebacker. Oh, he played at Missouri. Dude, I love Nick Bolton. Second round pick. Willie Gay, I believe, was a second round pick. Chris Jones was a second round pick, people. Your stud on defense was a second round pick. Chris Jones. Karlaftis, of course, was late first round pick. You got Felix now. Colin Saunders was not a high draft pick. Derek Nnadi, I think, was either second or third round. He's still on the rotation. The point is, the Chiefs don't have a whole bunch of first-round picks all over their team.
Yeah.
They don't have a first-round pick on the offensive line.
Yeah. It's like some of them, you don't even pan out the way that you need them to as far as those first-round picks. And then you get, again, you get the kind of the gems or the steals that are later.
The only first-round picks the Chiefs have in their starting lineup, correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick Mahomes. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not in the starting lineup.
No, not right now.
Patrick Mahomes is, I believe, the only, him and Trent McDuffie, the only first-round picks that start for the Chiefs. Juan Thornhill's not on this team anymore. He was not a first-round pick. Justin Reed, I'd have to look up when he was drafted, but he was obviously a free agent the Chiefs got. They didn't draft him. Brian Cook was, I think, a fourth-round pick last year, and he's going to play a lot more this year. So, obviously,
Reed was third round.
He was a third round pick. So think about that for a second.
Third round picks, really.
Yeah.
Derek Nnadi was a third round pick. If, you know, he rotates, but he did start some games.
Chiefs have done well in the third round over the years. Sure. They've done very well. Kareem Hunt was a third round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Jamal Charles a third round pick? We're going back a ways.
Charles may have been.
Was he a fourth round pick?
That,
Jared Allen was a fourth round pick. See what we're saying here and where we're going with
Jamal
this?
Jamal was a third round, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he was late third. Set well. Mid-third, 73rd pick.
So think about this for a second. Some of the greatest players, we just went through some of the best running backs the Chiefs ever had. Priest Holmes was undrafted.
Undrafted, yeah. We were talking about that the other day, and I was going to bring up Priest Holmes. Like, dude wasn't even drafted and, got stuck behind a really good running back in Baltimore and so went to Kansas City as a free agent. And
Jamal Lewis
just lit it up. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you think about it, the only running back that's been pretty good, and that was a short period of time where he was dominant for a few years after Priest had to step away, was Larry Johnson. He was a late first-round pick. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wondered why the Chiefs drafted a running back that time. So the Chiefs, if you sit here and you say draft a running back first round, you're crazy. You shouldn't be doing that. And the Chiefs don't. But if you're sitting here going, the Chiefs have to draft an offensive lineman in the first round to be any good on the line, you're dead wrong. Because think about this for a second. You have a team that won the Super Bowl. There are 22 starters. Only two are first-round picks. Only two. Only 10% of their starting lineup are first-round picks. In fact, they have more third-round picks that start than second-round picks, I'm pretty sure. So, or third or later, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. But that also tells you that's why you shouldn't get all caught up in, oh my God, we have Felix, what a first-round pick, because odds are the better pick of the draft is in the third or fourth or fifth or second round than the first round.
Yeah.
Your first-round pick might be serviceable, good. Every once in a while might be great. Obviously, Mahomes was great. But Helaire, serviceable, but not great. And Trey Smith's a stud in the sixth round. I mean, we went through a whole bunch of examples to prove that, didn't we?
Yes.
Hey, Keandre Coburn might be a tremendous run stuffer for the defense of Kansas City. That's one of the reasons they drafted him. Big, big, huge guy. He's not going to get a lot of pass pressure, and he's not going to probably move the pocket, but he's going to be in on running downs probably.
Yeah.
That's a good solid pick at sixth round. If you got a run clogger in there, that's a good pick. In the rotation on the defensive tackle spot, along with Colin Saunders, adds a little bit of depth along with Nnadi. Hey, that's fine. Which is Colin Saunders still on the team?
I don't think he's on the team anymore.
Okay, but he could do backflips. That's what's crazy. So big.
Turk Wharton, they signed, and I think that
so Colin's
Saunders
gone now.
Went somewhere else.
Yeah, but he was out of, I think, Western Illinois or something like that. So there are sometimes the picks that are later rounds are the better picks. When you re-look at it, redraft it years later. So that's why I'm with Dusty. Let's not get caught up too much in the draft grades. K-State, Julius Brent selected by his hometown Indianapolis Colts in the second round with the 44th overall pick. I Josh Hayes, safety of Tampa area, was picked by the Buccaneers in the sixth round. Of course, Deuce Vaughn, taken by the Cowboys in the sixth round. His dad is the director of college scouting. That was an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
His dad saying, hey, son, how would you like to come work with me next week? I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And you a ton if Deuce Vaughn ends up doing what I think he's going to do in the league. I am absolutely amazed at how he could fall to sixth round. I mean, to me, he is a – this is just me, and I'm probably biased. I've watched him in person. You've watched him in person. I think he's a heck of a player. And I – and he's not going to carry the ball 25 or 30 times a game in the NFL. And that's he don't need to be a good player in the NFL. I agree totally with Joel Klatt. I think Deuce Vaughn is a 10-year pro in this league. I think Deuce Vaughn is a 10-year pro. I think he's going to have a very good career. Now, if you sit here and say he's going to have a good career as Darren Sproles, that's saying something because Darren Sproles is pretty dang good. Mm-hmm. But I think Deuce Vaughn can have a long, outstanding career. Hopefully he has the right fit in Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott is not signed, so he is a free agent. There is a chance that the Cowboys might bring him back from what I read today. You know, Tony Pollard and Deuce Vaughn, that's not exactly two guys that should be able to carry the load. I mean, that's going to be interesting.
I probably wouldn't want to go into the season to Deuce Vaughn's rookie season
right.
like that.
Right. but I think Deuce Vaughn going in the sixth round is an absolute steal. Absolute tremendous value pick for the Dallas Cowboys. I think it's an absolute steal, and I'm really surprised that he went all the way down to the sixth round. But the two guys out of the four that I think are going to be really good in the pros, I think out of all those guys, the guy I think that has the most potential to be outstanding is Julius Brents. I think he is the best pro prospect out of the four. I mean, he's a tall, rangy corner. He's got good speed, got good hands. I think he's only going to get better in this league. I think Julius Brents, I think he's going to have a really good NFL career. I was actually thinking that if he was there in the second round, late second, the Chiefs should have grabbed him because that would give him a tall corner, which they have Jalen Watson, Josh Williams, Trent McDuffie, a smaller corner, but really good. I was like, I would not have no problem if the Chiefs added Julius Brents. I think he's the best of those 4K State players in regards to the upside of potential. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Felix has upside, too. I'm not saying he doesn't. But I think of those four, I think the guy that could have the best run, and he might not have the longest career, but he might have the best years in the league, is Julius Brents. I really like him. I think he's going to do very well in the NFL. And the next guy I would say in that, if I did a pecking order, is Deuce Vaughn. I think he's going to stay in this league for a very long time. And then, you know, Felix could easily be in this league for 10 years and play for the Chiefs for 3 or 4 and bounce around in the league and be a situational pass rusher. That's kind of how I see him. And I may be totally wrong on that. That's just how I see him. I see him as a guy that could get you maybe 6 or 7 sacks in a season, come down on third down, be a situational pass rusher, third down, passing downs. That's kind of how I see his role, and I may be completely wrong. He might do better against the run than I think, and he'll be an every down player. And if he is, that's terrific. You know, Karlaftis last year, yeah, I think a lot of things they were saying about Karlaftis, they're saying about Felix, honestly. A guy that has a great motor, has a great attitude, good character guy, that is young and improving. Remember that? That's what mm-hmm. they said about Karlaftis. Yeah, you know, he doesn't just jump off the charts on film, but he's getting better. He didn't start playing football till a late age. You know, Felix is getting better each and every year he's played football. I think they're very similar from that standpoint. And Karlaftis, I think, had 6 sacks last year. And he was a situational pass rusher. He started a few games due to injury. When Clark was suspended, he started. He didn't jump off the charts. He didn't sit here and say, wow, what a steal, what an amazing first-round pick. But you also didn't say he was a bust.
Yeah, you started hearing his name a lot more as the year went on.
Right.
Like, and so you kind of got used to that, and they're like, hey, maybe this is a dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe he can do some things.
And I think that's what Felix could be, too. I think if you – listen, if you get Karlaftis and Felix combined to get 13 sacks, that's pretty good.
Well, yeah.
I'll take it.
No, I'm not going to complain about it.
Chris Jones is going to get his share.
Yeah.
You would think. So,
yeah. I think the Karlaftis was maybe like more raw, than Felix.
I mean,
you're talking about the Big 12 defensive player of the year, the second team All-American in Felix, and that's not what Karlaftis was.
Right.
He is second team Big 10.
Yeah.
And so.
He started playing football late.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He played soccer.
And Felix got big late, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that, it's still funny to look at his picture when he went and was sitting there with Connor Riley at Manhattan before he came into before he, you know, his senior at high school. He looks like a a wide receiver generously, like his body type. So, but yeah, I you know, if you can get that from those two, yeah, I would take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that doesn't mean that's a bad pick at all. It's a guy that really helps you, but he's not a superstar. Well, you know, you don't expect to pick 31 to be a superstar. Pick one, you do, no doubt. Or a top 10 guy you trade up for, like Mahomes. You expect him to be a stud. Well, that's turned out pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with you on Julius Brent, so I said that on Friday. Whoever gets him is going to get a steal. I didn't think it was going to be 44. I thought it was going to be a little later than that.
I agree.
I really didn't think he'd go that high, but obviously his hometown team, kind of like Felix, liked what they saw and decided they'd pick him. But, I mean, you stand next to that guy and and he's not afraid to be physical either.
Oh, yeah.
He got kicked out of a game for targeting this year. So, you know, he's not going to be scared to be a physical corner either. And that's kind of what you need in the league right now.
Yeah.
You don't want to be too physical because you can get called for all the PIs that are non-existent. But
I think it's a good pick, no doubt. I'll let you run over there real quick. Other K-State players headed to new destinations include Malik Knowles, wide receiver to the Vikings, kicker punter Ty Zentner to the Eagles. I think he has a chance to maybe stick in NFL. Quarterback Adrian Martinez with the Lions, wide receiver Cade Warner, Kurt Warner's son, with the Buccaneers. Tight end Sammy Wheeler was also invited to the Bears minicamp. The KU football team didn't have any players drafted. They have a ton of starters coming back for next year's team for Lance Leipold. They did have three players sign unrestricted free agent deals. Edge rusher Lonnie Phelps, some thought he'd be drafted. He's going to the Browns. Offensive lineman Earl Bostwick is going to the Cowboys. And defensive lineman Caleb Sampson is going to the Colts. So that's kind of a look at K-State and KU players that are going to be trying to make NFL rosters, whether they are drafted or undrafted free agents signed after the season is over. NBA playoffs, there was a Game 7 yesterday, and one of the greatest guards of all time, and certainly probably the best shooting guard of all time, lit up the Kings.
Just how ironic, one of the worst road teams in the NBA during the regular season will have the biggest road win of the playoffs as Curry lays it up and in, a 50-point Game 7 for Steph Curry.
50 points in Game 7. That's the most points scored by an NBA player in the history of NBA playoffs in a Game 7. Steph Curry did that yesterday, and the Warriors needed him to do it. The Warriors won 120 to 100. They won by 20, but it doesn't really – that's misleading. That game was pretty tight for a long time. Steph Curry went 20 of 38 from the floor, took 38 shots. He doesn't normally take that many shots, but that's still pretty good, over 50% from the floor. 7 of 18 from three, made seven threes. But the story is Steph Curry made 13 twos. Seriously, that's the story. Steph Curry got all kinds of layups and floaters. The Kings' defense was not good. And the Warriors needed Steph Curry to be lights out because Klay Thompson was 4 of 19 from the floor, 2 of 10 from 3. He couldn't hit a thing. He, Jordan Poole, and Andrew Wiggins combined to shoot 12 out of 44. Golden State missed 11 free throws. But, thankfully, Curry went nuts with 50. Kevon Looney had 21 rebounds, 10 offensive boards. So Looney and Curry saved the day. And De'Aaron Fox, the star for the Kings, had an off night, bad time to have an off night, 5 of 19 in Game 7. Malik Monk, who's been really good in the series, 4 of 14. And if you're a Sacramento Kings fan, you have nobody to blame but Charles Barkley. Because Charles Barkley said the Saturday night that the Kings were the better team, they're the more athletic team, they're the younger team, and he guaranteed that they were going to win Game 7. He even said the Kings were going to beat the Lakers in the next round and make it to Western Conference Finals, and then the Kings lose Game 7 at home by 20. So, Barkley jinx is in effect. Golden State moves on to face the Lakers in the second round. You better enjoy this series. You're going to have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green going up against LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's going to be fun. That's going to be probably the last time you're going to see LeBron versus Curry in a playoff series, which I'm trying. They played each other in the finals multiple times when LeBron was with the Cavs. So this will probably be the last time you see it. I mean, LeBron's 38. Curry, I think, is 35. Maybe there'll be another rendition of a playoff series between these two going at it, but this is going to be a lot of fun. Lakers and the Warriors, the 6 and the 7, they weren't worried about their seed. They weren't worried about home court advantage. The Warriors were one of the worst teams in NBA on the road, but it comes to the playoffs. Do you think they cared? They won two of their four road games in Sacramento and won a winner-take-all Game 7 on the road. So the Warriors, they're not worried about what their road record was during the regular season. These teams that have stars aren't worried about their overall record and what their seed is in the playoffs because they know all they got to do is go win one on the road. That's it. You got to win one on the road. You happen to lose one at home, then okay, now we got to win two on the road. If we don't have home court advantage, it's not that big a deal. And the Rockets did that back in the day with Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon. They're like, we're just going to get healthy for the playoffs. They were a sixth seed. They had won the title the year before, and Jordan had been retired or came back there late in 95. And the Houston Rockets, what they did, we're just going to get in. We're going to make sure everybody's healthy. They were a sixth seed, and they won the NBA title. Whatever. We're just going to get in. And I think that's what you got to think nowadays. The regular season is overrated. It is. It's overrated. And you've got the Warriors with a sixth seed. Struggled on the road all season long. Didn't matter. They knew they could win on the road in the playoffs. They step up your game. The focus is laser focus with these great players that have been there many times before. The Warriors have been there before. The Kings had not in a game seven. The Lakers, you know, they knocked off the Grizzlies, a young team up and coming, and they won their series in six. There is something to be said for experience, and now you get LeBron versus Steph, second round of Western Conference Finals. The six and the seven seed. And you think the Lakers are worried that they have to go to Golden State in game one? That's what's funny. Golden State's got home court advantage now in this series.
Yeah. No,
nobody's worried.
No.
Curry was amazing yesterday. I mentioned that you were in the other room, but he had 50, but he had 13 twos. I mean, he got into the lane and getting layups. It was amazing. And he had to. He had to take over. Klay Thompson couldn't hit anything. Jordan Poole was bad again. Andrew Wiggins didn't shoot it well. They missed 11 free throws. And they still won on the road because of mainly one guy, Steph Curry. And Kevon Looney was good, too. Eastern Conference semifinals, the Heat won 108-101 over the Knicks in game one at Madison Square Garden. Jimmy Butler had a rolled ankle. We'll see how he's going to be able to go as he led the way with 25 points, 11 rebounds. The Heat, the eighth seed, up 1-0 in Eastern Conference semis. Tonight, the Sixers, more than likely without Joel Embiid. He's doubtful. Sixers and the Celtics begin their best of seven semifinal series at 6:30 on TNT, game one in Boston. In the West, the Nuggets. So many people talk about, oh, the Suns are the odds-on favorite. Vegas has them odds-on favorite. The Nuggets are a better team. I'm sitting here, and I'm amazed at the disrespect the Nuggets get. It is ridiculous. Like, the questions after the game. I mean, these are some of the real questions. They ask Kevin Durant, Monty Williams, are you surprised at what the Nuggets? And Durant's like, they're the number one seed, you moron. I mean, yeah, they act like the Suns have Chris Paul, who is not a superstar anymore, okay? Chris Paul is not a superstar anymore. He's in a lot of State Farm commercials, but he's not a superstar anymore. He's a solid, really good player. He can take over the game at times. He's not a superstar. He's a very good player now, used to be a superstar. Kevin Durant is a superstar. Devin Booker's a superstar, okay? And DeAndre Ayton is a very good player that they don't use enough, in my opinion, offensively. They've got four really good players, okay? They have no bench. Landry Shamet comes off the bench, and he hasn't done that well. They don't have much of a bench. But everybody acts like the Nuggets are made of a whole bunch of schmoes. The Denver Nuggets have the two-time reigning MVP on their team in his prime. Jamal Murray, who is a superstar who had a torn ACL and now is back the way he used to play in the bubble when the Nuggets made a run to the Western Conference Finals. They've got two stars, too. So the Suns have one more star than the Nuggets? Well, that's neutralized and erased when you have the deeper bench. And they got guys like Bruce Brown, Christian Brown coming off the bench making huge contributions. It's the Aaron Gordon is underrated. Michael Porter Jr. is very good.
People just so much disrespect Michael Porter Jr.
You're right.
Like he's not an NBA player.
Oh, my God.
Dude, this is why I picked the Nuggets at the beginning of the year to win the dang thing.
Yeah.
Because I said if Jamal Murray gets back healthy and starts cooking, this is an outstanding, unreal team.
And
I'm watching the Timberwolves series and, you know, Minnesota try to make some comebacks. But I'm watching that series. I'm like, it's going to take somebody's absolute 100% best to beat this team in a seven-game series.
I agree.
This is not some joke team that just came out here and just decided that they were going to be good at basketball this year.
Right.
Like, this has been building up for them, and if they stayed healthy, it probably would have peaked before now. But Jamal Murray had the injury, and that kind of derailed what they were doing. So if Murray gets back healthy, and he is, he's doing what he was doing.
Yes, he is.
And that's the scary thing for teams that are playing the Nuggets, and people like Kevin Durant understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, media members that are just want to, you know, ride on Devin Booker and Kevin Durant or Chris Paul or whoever, Steph Curry or whoever, LeBron, whoever's playing for the Lakers, they don't look at teams like Denver and take them seriously.
Because they're not on the East or West
looking
Coast.
At Milwaukee and taking them seriously, and they won a title over the Suns, right? And so I think Denver's actually probably where they want to be from that aspect of, okay, don't take us seriously. We're just going to show you and prove you wrong.
Well, as you have a chip on your shoulder as a number one seed, which is rare that happens.
Exactly. And so I just, it is wild to me. Like, the people that are supposedly actually covering this league or questioning how good the Nuggets actually are.
It's because they haven't been watching them all year.
Exactly.
And they act like the Nuggets are the sixth seed or something. Yeah. They're the underdog. They're not. They're the best team in the they're the best team in the Western Conference, and I think the best team in the league. I really do.
No, right now, I am not at all going to dispute that.
And they're very close. They got great cohesion. They gel. They have chemistry. And they are deep. They can go 8 or 9 deep. And they've got the best, maybe the best player in the NBA, in Jokic. You could argue Giannis and others, but you could argue that he is the best player. He's been the last 2 years MVP. And I would sit here and tell you that Jamal Murray might be the most explosive guard in all the NBA. Next to Curry, I guess.
Yeah.
Or behind Curry, whatever you want to look at it. They're fun to watch. The Nuggets are really, really good. A couple other little nuggets here to pass along to you before we sign off today. Sophomore Brendan Jones, 2-run RBI triple, played the game-winning run. The K-State baseball team is 28-17 overall. They are tied for second in the Big 12 at 11-7. And right now, they have the whole bubble thing with baseball and the tournament. And K-State is barely on the outside looking in, which is amazing to me. If you're second place in the Big 12, how are you not an NCAA tournament baseball team? And I think they're going to prove they're going to get their way in. But they won over number 14 Texas Tech. They 2 out of 3 in Manhattan. And they got a lot of home games the rest of the way in conference play. And they're really good at Toyton Family Stadium. They won 10-8 yesterday. And they're tied for second in the Big 12 with Oklahoma State at 11-7. They'll face in-state rival Wichita State tomorrow at 6 o'clock there at Eck Stadium in Wichita. And then we'll end the show with this. And I wasn't planning on saying anything about this because I didn't really think much of it. And this is what's sad, because we just brush it aside like it's just common stuff now. But there was another situation where there was a youth basketball tournament or AAU basketball tournament where a coach got into a fight with a referee. You've probably seen the video by now. If you haven't, you can Google it. In fact, if you Google it, you'll have a whole bunch of them that'll pop up. And it's ridiculous and stupid. And listen, I'm just going to say, I'm going to be very strong with these words. And if you don't like it, then, you know, you don't have to like it. But listen, I'm going to start with the coaches because, you know, listen, coaching is not easy. Officiating is not easy. All right. We were at a baseball tournament at Hayes, and there was one call where the two umpires absolutely blew a call. I was right there coaching first, and it was a call. It was a drop third strike, and our kid got to the bag. First baseman came 2 feet off the bag to catch it because the throw was low, and they called our guy out, and it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had the best view of all of them. It was brutally bad. Okay. And I was upset for a second. I'm like, hey, no. He was safe. His foot is off the bag, and I'm showing 2 feet, you know? And then you just deal with it. Then you walk to the dugout. They're not going to change the call. They appealed the home plate umpire. He said, no, his foot was on the bag. No, it wasn't. He didn't see it either. But they're two college kids that are umping. Yeah. And that was it. You know, you react because you're in the heat of the competition. You react, and then you're like, okay, you know, we're still ahead or behind, whatever the case may be. It don't matter if you're behind or ahead. Bottom line is they're not going to change the call. And I talked to the one kid. He's a 3-year college student at Hayes. He's from Oklahoma. He's making some money on the side. And that's awesome. And that's cool. And we told him after every game, thank you for umping. They happened to be our umps for all the games at the tournament at Hayes. And there are coaches that are worse towards these umpires, as we know, across the country. And the same thing with youth basketball, whether it's, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old kids playing, or it's 16, 17, 18-year-old kids playing in AAU basketball. But there's another incident where a coach got all upset and apparently thinks he's the head coach of the NBA Finals and he's winning a championship, getting a big ring, and he's getting paid $1 million, and who knows what the hell's up with him. So anyway, he gets all riled about some kind of call, and he comes onto the floor, which is a big no-no, and then basically it's a standoff and a fight ensues. And the official is just trying to hold his ground, and he's ready to swing because he's got a right to protect himself. And it is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I understand a coach yelling sometimes, disagreeing with the call, arguing. That's all part of it. That's part of officials know when they get in this business, the coach is going to get them sometimes for a call that they missed. Officials miss calls. They're going to hear about it. They know that. Okay. Most people know that. Now, whether a coach is going to keep going on about it for 30 minutes, that of course gets old. But there used to be a time, I know this is crazy to imagine, where coaches knew their role, and they knew where the hell they're supposed to be on the sideline, and that is to stay on the sideline. It's called a coach's box. Your job is to coach. The official's job is officiate. The player's job is to not worry about the officiating and play. And yes, as a coach, you have a right to disagree with a call. You have a right to yell and say, oh, that's not right, or you missed that one. And the official's got a right to tee you up if he feels like you're being a jerk. That's as far as it goes. When you come onto the court, honestly, as soon as a coach comes onto the court, especially when the game's going on, or during a timeout comes all the way onto the court, and I'm talking college coaches do it too. You see the best coaches in the world in college do it. They come all the way out. Fran McCaffrey was ridiculously, totally out of line with his stupid crap that he did, staring down an official through the entire timeout. What is this, theater? And to the official's credit, he didn't blink an eye, just stared right back at him. You know, I was like, whatever, dude. That's bullying. That is bullying. That is a joke. And listen, I know as a youth coach myself that, yeah, there's times we get upset about a call. I've never once thought, hey, I'm going to go charge the field and try to swing at an ump. Something is wrong with you. Something is really mentally wrong with you if you think it's okay to just go out and swing at an official or an umpire. And then the media don't make it any better. When you show a stare down of a coach towards somebody else, or you show the nose-to-nose and the manager spitting into the umpire's face, not on purpose, but he's so close that his saliva is flying out, which is really not good with all the COVID we had, remember? But it is glorized. What's the word I'm looking for? It's almost like you're encouraging it. When you show this stuff time after time, and it makes a deal on SportsCenter where a manager starts, you know, kicking the dirt on home plate and goes nose to nose with an umpire, it's encouraged. It almost looks like we're encouraging it. At least those guys don't swing at the umpire right there at home plate. Listen, and when this happens and it doesn't get cleaned up, now younger people think they can do it. I saw a horrible, horrific thing where a wrestler was wrestling somebody else. He lost, went to do a fake handshake, and sucker punched a kid and knocked his lights out after he lost to the kid in wrestling. That kid should be thrown in jail for a while. That's a total assault. Mm. And I don't know who the hell thinks this is okay. It is beyond belief what is going on. And you wonder why officials don't want to officiate anymore. Parents aren't any better, okay? And I'm not saying all parents, but there are parents that have just lost their freaking minds, and they do these things that are they're way out of line. The coaches then doing it make it to where the parents think they're okay to do it. Listen, it starts at the top with your coach. I don't care if it's an AU coach or a coach of a high school team or a youth team. It starts with your coach, and if your coach goes out and he's always arguing and going out on the field and going out on the court and getting out of the coach's box and going face to face or clenching his fist, or obviously eventually throwing haymakers, you are supposed to be the leader of that organization. And when you go out there and do that, you are telling all of your kids, your assistant coaches, and your fan base, it's okay to do that. That's what you're doing. You are saying, when you go do this, the kids are like, well, I guess I can do that. You know, we tell our kids, yeah, we're going to disagree with umpire from time to time. If there's something wrong, we will deal with it. Every once in a while, one of our kids will start to say something like, no, that's not your place. We've got this handled. You're not a coach. Know your role. We need to know our role. And the umpires need to know their role. And the fans need to know their role. And the parents need to know their role. And all these people don't know what their role is anymore. Not all, but some. And the reason I bring this up, and I see that Jay Heidrick, a local person, not lives here anymore, Jay Heidrick, put something out there. Jeff Goodman, who covers high school and college basketball, not high school, but college basketball, but he's on the recruiting trail. He goes to AAU tournaments. And this guy came out on the court and was trying to fight an official. Jeff Goodman put a tweet, "These refs don't get paid enough to deal with this BS. This guy should never be allowed to coach again in anything." And I totally agree. But Jay Heidrick has an interesting thing. And you know what? We were talking the other day about how in, Pennsylvania, I think, that Little League's, they've got this plan to where if you get thrown out of a game as a parent in the stands, you will not be allowed to come back and sit in the stands until you've umped three baseball games. And you would be umping with a certified umpire, so it wouldn't be just a mockery of the thing. And I'm like, wow, the simple threat of that should make parents, you know, clam up a little bit. Jay Heidrich has an interesting proposal, Dusty. And I must say, I think it's kind of cool. Three changes to help. I would assume it would be talking about traveling tournaments and all this stuff, no matter the sport. He says, number one, every team pays a $1,000 deposit. So see, let me explain what a deposit is, people. Everybody immediately be like, oh, these teams don't have $1,000 just to throw out there. They got tournament fees, and then you got the parking, and parents got to pay for the tickets. No. It's a deposit. So chill out. Every team pays a $1,000 deposit. This is Jay's proposal, and I like it. Every team pays a $1,000 deposit. If your coach gets kicked out of a game, you lose $1,000. Point number two. If your coach gets kicked out, your team is kicked out of the tournament. You're done. That's it. You're done. So, hey, Mr. Hothead, coach that likes to fight with officials, if you get kicked out of the game, you lost $1,000. And then your team is done for the whole tournament. And number three, and this is going even further, and I think one and two can easily be controlled. It's up to a coach. You got two or three coaches. A lot of these teams only have one coach on the bench. So one or two adults, if they can totally control this. You get your $1,000 back because you don't get kicked out. And the team doesn't get kicked out. Everybody plays the games. Isn't that what's supposed to happen anyway? Mm-hmm. But the third point, Jay goes one step further. And I think there's a problem with number three because you would have to identify what team the parent is from. I think that would be difficult. But I get his point. Number three, if a parent gets kicked out, the coach gets booted too. So if a parent keeps going and going and going, it's the coach's job to tell the parent, shut the hell up, sit down. Because if I get booted, then the team gets booted. I like the idea. I think you have a hard time having people actually be able to tell, what parent is cheering for what team. Like, you know who they're cheering for and being loud, but it could be that they claim, well, I'm just a bystander. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of gray area there. But the coach thing is not a gray area. You know the coach represents the team. He's on the sideline. He's on the bench. He gets kicked out. You lose $1,000. If he doesn't, what a concept. You get to keep your $1,000. All you have to do to keep the $1,000 is just don't get kicked out. That shouldn't be that hard. Mm-hmm. So everybody should get their $1,000 back, every single coach and team. And if your coach gets kicked out, you get kicked out as a team. You don't think that would make the coach get in line? You've just screwed all the players by getting kicked out. And I would be even willing to go one step further than what Jay's doing. If you're going to say if the coach gets kicked out, your team gets kicked out of the tournament. If a parent gets kicked out, the coach is booted too, thus the team gets booted. I would argue that if a player gets kicked out, the team is done as well. To put the players in check. Because mm-hmm. you've seen players even throw down against officials in games.
Oh, yeah.
So I would actually add to Jay's a little bit and say I would put if a parent or a player on the team gets kicked out, the coach is booted too. Because a player should have responsibility. And so the last point Jay says is make teams police themselves. Amen, brother.
They have to.
Well, they have to, but they don't.
Yeah, I know. At these tournaments, that's where it has to start.
It has to start with your coach.
Internally with your coach. I mean, if it doesn't, then
you have major problems.
There's issues. I don't like point three, to be completely honest with you, because I got 12 kids on my team. I can't control the emotion of 24 people.
True.
Human adults.
Right.
Like, I can preach it as much as I want.
Right.
But
all
I can't
actually. One bad apple.
I can't actually sit there and hold this dude's hand and make sure he doesn't get kicked out of a game.
Right.
I'm already doing that with 12 kids that are on my team.
Now, maybe what Jay's meaning is, maybe I've took this a step too far because I'm connecting the dots, but what he means is if a parent gets kicked out, the coach is booted, but the team still gets to play. Maybe he means that because the coach didn't technically get. Because he says if the coach gets booted, the team is done. But if the coach gets booted, booted, not because of his own actions, but because of a parent, then I would think the team should still be able to play the tournament.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking on point three, too, is based on point two, then the whole team's done.
Yeah, if because a parent gets kicked out, according to how Jay did it. Yeah,
just kind of in that order that he's doing it. But there's a lot of that I agree with. For sure. You know, there's part of it, even as the coach, that maybe I don't, because you see a high school team where a coach not physically abuses an official, but he'll get a technical and then be like real frustrated in that heat of the moment, and then boom, he's got a second one and he's done.
Right.
So is that the same as what we saw here with a coach actually assaulting an official and trying to fight? Right?
One of the other problems with this idea by Jay, and I haven't had time to really soak it in, but one of the other problems with it is if you get a official that has it out for your team or doesn't like the player's attitude, he knows he can get you kicked out of the whole tournament, so he double tees up the coach just waiting for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's one of the problems with it too. I think point A would be about the best thing you could enforce, and that is every team pays $1,000 deposit, or make it bigger.
It's quicker to do it that way because you're already paying fees to get in a tournament anyway.
Right.
And so,
yes.
Yeah, but just put that, it's like your first and last month's rent, right? Put a security deposit down.
Right. Now, some teams are funded by NBA players and things like that to where $1,000 is no big deal.
Yeah.
But for a lot of teams, it would have an impact.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think point A, I'm with. And once again, Jay says every team pays $1,000 deposit. If your coach gets kicked out, your deposit is gone. I'm cool with that. Number two, if your coach gets kicked out, your team is kicked out of the entire tournament. I'm with him on the concept. I do think there are some there could be some issues there by a coach or by an official, maybe, you know, having a little too much power, knowing that. And then the third one, if a parent gets kicked out, the coach gets booted too. I could see that a little bit, but as long as he doesn't mean that the parent gets kicked out, the coach gets booted, thus the team gets kicked out because of a parent, then that's no good. But if he's meaning the coach gets booted because a parent gets kicked out, okay, you still have other coaches to coach, and then your players still get to play a tournament, then if that's what he means, I'm okay with three. You're right, a head coach can't control all of that, but I will tell you one thing that would accomplish that Jay has here is it would make sure the coach does deal with those parents. If he gets kicked out, he's going to make sure he deals with those parents. And he may even say, you know what? If you're going to continue to be a problem, your kid's off the team too. So I'm not totally against number three, but I'd want to make sure that he doesn't mean you say coach gets kicked out, your team gets kicked out. But then you say if a parent gets kicked out, the coach is kicked out. Do you mean then the team's kicked out? Because that, I think, is a major would be a problem.
Yeah, I think that you're opening on point three. You're opening a can of worms. I don't know where you stop with it.
Right.
Because what, like Uncle Dusty shows up with his Buddy Bucket shirt on. I'm not part of that. I don't know the coach. I don't know the other players. But I know my nephew. Right. Like and so if I feel like something went wrong and then I'm yelling and screaming and whatever, get kicked out of the place. I've never met the coach.
Right.
Maybe this is the first time I've gone to an MAYB or AAU tournament that weekend. And I've never met the coach, and I'm getting kicked out because I'm Uncle Dusty, and his whole team gets kicked out because I made a
mistake. A good point.
So that's where do you stop on that part of point three? Because it could easily be a parent, it could be an uncle, it could be a brother that's 4 years older.
Or the parent claims they're uncle, but they are a parent.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Exactly.
Check their, you don't have time. You don't have the people there.
That's not my kid. It's my nephew.
Even though it's their kid. Right. That's a major gray area. So I think you and I are in agreement on that. One makes sense. Two, you could go that way, although I think it's a little bit dangerous because an official have a little bit too much power. And then three, maybe going a little too far, but at least it makes you think and have a conversation. And I'm okay with presenting that idea.
Oh, sure,
that yeah. Because something
put it out there
something
sure.
needs to be done differently.
Absolutely.
Because it's getting worse. And I haven't seen anything too. I've heard stories of nearby gyms where things have happened. I've been at tournaments where I've heard some commotions, but luckily we have not been involved in something that way in regards to a team that we had playing against. I know our guys aren't going to do anything like that, but it's a problem, and it somehow, some way, we need to address it and address it in a strong way. I saw John Higgins was reffing that stuff again. Great referee official who was in Final Fours was reffing. I don't know if it's because they had a shortage of young people don't want to do it anymore. He was running up and down at an AAU tournament last weekend, you know, and maybe he's trying to bring some attention to it, saying, listen, I'm here to protect these younger officials who want to learn so I can be a buffer. Maybe that's what he's doing. And if he is, good for John Higgins. That's a guy that's caught a lot of heat. He's got death threats, for crying out loud, because of games he's reffed. And if, think about that for a second. You don't think people have their life out of whack? When you're threatening officials, death threats, people actually do this towards college players all the time. They do it to officials. They've probably done it to coaches. And I'll bet you it's happened at the youth level, too, somewhere in this country. People have used, fired out death threats, whether social media or something or whatever. And it's a game, for crying out loud. It is not life and death. It should never be life and death. It's entertainment, sports. And we all, I think, lose track of how it's supposed to be fun. I know professional sports is a business. College sports has become a business. All this traveling tournament stuff has become a business. But the kids themselves should be having fun. And if you are a parent that gets so out of line to where you are kicked out of a game, or not a parent, just any fan, if you get so riled up that you're not even involved per se, from the standpoint you're not a coach on the bench, you're not a player, and you're just there to watch a game, and you get kicked out, then you went way too far, clearly. Clearly. And I'm not one that's going to sit here and tell you that I couldn't get kicked out someday. I could be really mad at a call as a fan for my son next year in basketball, and my voice travels, that's for sure. And it's deep. And if I just get fired up and stand up like, come on, what was that? If the official deems that to be too much, usually you give the warning. Usually a parent will get a warning. We had one in baseball high school last week where we had a few parents that got, because this Abilene kid started talking something to one of our kids, ran into the first baseman. They both had a right to the spot. First baseman had a right to catch it. Our runner had a right to run through to get the first. It was a bang-bang play. And that's one thing, whatever. You want to call interference? The umpire could have determined that. That's his call. And then the Abilene kid chirped at our kid or our dugout, whatever he said. I don't know what he said. And then right away, we had a few people get riled up in the stands. Throw him out! Throw him out! Well, first of all, did you hear exactly what he said?
Yeah.
And in basketball, you get a T, but you don't get thrown out. In baseball, shouldn't you have a warning of some kind instead of immediately being ejected? You don't have a first and second offense in baseball, do you? But you get a warning. You get a warning. I mean, a technical is a warning. Or sometimes you get a warning plus the technical, which is another warning, and then two technicals, you're ejected.
Yeah.
But in football, you get, what, two unsportsmanlike penalties. You mess up once, you're still in the game. Baseball, I don't think you should immediately be thrown out if you're chirping. Now, if you come and throw a haymaker at the kid, well, yeah, you're thrown out. There's no. Okay, you punched him once. This one's a freebie, a warning. Next time you punch somebody, you're out of here.
Yeah.
There's a difference, obviously. But the umpire immediately, and I didn't even think it was that bad with a few of the people in the stands getting, you know, a little bit fired up. But the umpire was an older official. He immediately told the fan, sit down. He immediately he wasn't going to have it. And he has the right to do that. And he's like, sit down. No, be quiet. Sit down. Okay, cool. What happens, though, is our people in our area are, for the most part, smart enough and respectful enough to go, okay, I got riled up a little bit, sit my butt down. But in a lot of these situations, there's no respect. So the ump says, sit down. You ain't telling me what to do. I paid money to get in here, and you blew the call, and now you're talking to me. And then it escalates. And part of it is ego.
Oh, yeah.
Part of it's ego. And you know who the real losers in the whole thing are that suffer the most? The kids. This is supposed to be for the kids. The kids are supposed to play, get to learn, improve, work on fundamentals. It's a sport. It's a game. None of the high school baseball kids in the situation I'm talking about the other night, or these traveling sports, the percentage of these kids that go on and professionally play basketball or baseball or football are slim to none. So why are we getting our panties in a bunch about everything? And we really need to. Acacia, I have had conversations. I've sat with Bill Faflick and Jeremy Holiday of Acacia. And you can have your thoughts on Acacia all you want. You may say that Acacia screws up and they do this and you don't agree with this. That's fine. They aren't perfect. Nobody is. And there's some things Acacia does that I think is wonderful. And I think there's some things that Acacia could easily fix and they haven't. That's my opinion. It doesn't mean it's fact. It's just opinion. But I have sat down. I respect those people. I do. I respect those people. I respect the executive director, Bill Faflick. I respect Jeremy Holiday. And I may not agree with everything they say. They may not agree with everything that we say as radio people or media or whatever. But they made it very clear to me and to others in this committee that we had this meeting with in June of this past summer. If you can really get the word out and really try to stress on your radio programs, and when you do play-by-play, please don't keep bemoaning a missed call. Because, believe it or not, there are family members of those officials that might be listening that aren't happy. Like, it's one thing as a play-by-play announcer say, oh, wow, I think they missed that one. Or, oh, that was really not a good call. But then what happens is sometimes play-by-play announcers talk about it for the next 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And really, you just got to let it go within probably 5-10 seconds. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. There's probably a few times I've gone a little longer with the call. But they made a good point. They were like, you know, you guys in the media can help us with this. Well, Jeremy Holliday, Bill Faflick, if they're listening to a show right now, I think they'd appreciate what we're talking about. Because Keisha and every state activity association across the country has a shortage of officials. There's a shortage of umpires, officials, any sport, you name it, there's a shortage. And these parents and these coaches that can't control themselves are ruining it. They are ruining it for the kids. And you are getting to the point where games are moving for a Friday or Thursday. You're getting to a point where there's not officials to do freshman or JV games. And those, and you know who complains the most and whines and bellyaches and yells the most about how, oh, that don't, why are they moving this game? Why did they cancel this game? There's not enough officials. Oh, come on. Can't we find a few people? Well, you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. The other part of the problem is people that don't go to games very often. To just go, like you said, Uncle Dusty shows up for one game, and he's a complete jerk in the stands. He might not go to any other games during the year, but you created a bad experience for the umpiring crew. That doesn't help anything either. Like, why are you getting all riled up when you don't even, I mean, yeah, you have a nephew playing, you want to support him, but why are you getting so riled up to where you get kicked out of a game when it's not even, I'm not even saying it's right for, I'm not saying, well, it's okay if your mom or dad, but uncle can't do it. But it's like, come on, you're a little bit distanced from it, or should be. It is really frustrating. It's insanity is what it is, and people lose their minds for moments in time, which happens with obviously some really, really bad things that happen in society, as we know, that are documented and horrible crimes. And you've got to figure out a way to put it in check. I'm not perfect. I get upset at things. I mean, I get riled about things. People know that. And I try to do my best to curtail things. But I just don't know anybody in the right. I don't know of anybody in sound mind and body that thinks it's okay to go start swinging at a basketball official on the court. You need to go get checked out. You need to go talk to somebody. You need to see somebody because you have a major problem. You have a major anger management problem. If you come onto the court or on a baseball field, and it's one thing to come out and argue as a coach and from the dugout, and that's part of the game. We know that. But when you're coming out and you are in essence bullying somebody or getting in their personal space and threatening them with really bad words that are personal, it's one thing to argue and say, "Yo, listen, that's the third call you've missed. What's going on here?" Than saying, your mama sucks, you stink, your dad's is a dork. You know what I'm saying? You make it all personal. No, I don't need to be personal. Not at all. But when you make it personal, and that's when that stuff happens. Then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm going to punch this guy. Or, oh, I'm so mad at this official. He's been jobbing us on these calls for the last 6 minutes of this game. Well, that's it. I've had enough. Well, I have the right now to go on the court and then start swinging. You've lost your bleeping mind. Go get help. Seek it quickly and stop coaching if you're going to go that far.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.